Welcome to iFaith Sermon 34 from 1 Thessalonians. In our first message from this letter, called Death is Not the End, we saw that the Lord will take us up into heaven, away from the earth, or else we will welcome him and escort him to the earth, a renewed and cleansed planet. Either interpretation seems possible with the Bible, but either way, death is not the end. Paul was writing to the Thessalonians because there was misunderstanding. Particularly, some had said that if you died, even though you are a Christian, you would not benefit from the work of Christ. That was the end of you. And Paul assures them that the dead in Christ, those who sleep, will rise first. Everyone will be saved. Death is not the end. Well, this is our second message from 1 Thessalonians, and I bring you warm greetings from London, where I've been doing some talking and training with some teachers. I'll be heading up to the north this afternoon to Birmingham to stay with family, and also I'll be teaching there tomorrow night. So let's go to chapter 5 of 1 Thessalonians. Now, concerning the times and the seasons, brothers, and perhaps your translation says times and dates, concerning times and seasons, you have no need to have anything written to you. Paul is not going to give the Thessalonians a list of signs because they would be of no benefit. Even if Paul knew them, how could he know what signs would precede the end of the world if there were any? And he's an apostle. There's only one possible exception, and that comes in 2 Thessalonians 2. And yet many people think that may have a different application, maybe even in the first century. But does that mean that there will be no things happening to make us extra alert? Does it mean there'll be no indications? Well, I don't know. But I know in the first century, there are all kinds of things that were crazy, and it's been that way every century since. For example, 1 Thessalonians is written around the year 50 AD. Nero has been emperor. Well, no, he'll become emperor. This is the time of Claudius. Nero is just a crazy guy, and he'll become emperor in about 3 years from the time this letter is written. You know, this is a guy who was bloodthirsty, who was arbitrary, extremely cruel, vindictive. It would be easy to think that, well, this must be the one who opposes Christ. Maybe this is the end. There was a major earthquake a few years later in 62. Of course, in 79, Vesuvius erupts, buries the towns of Herculaneum and Pompeii and Stabiae. Would have seemed very much like the end of the world to many people. We can find awe-inspiring, amazing events in every generation, not just every century, every generation. If you cherry-pick the events the right way, whether they're meteorological or political or whatever, you can convince yourself the end is here. These events may remind us of God's awesome power and of his coming judgment, but they do not allow us to build a timetable, like a bus schedule. I'm looking out my hotel window here in London, and I can see where the buses go and the bus stop, and there's a sign, and it lists the times for each station, and if all goes according to plan, you can have a fair degree of certainty. It's not that way with the coming of the Lord. And Paul discourages the Thessalonians from getting caught up into that. Now, as we saw before, he's not telling them, don't talk about the second coming. That we should encourage one another with the right kinds of words. That is, an assurance that death is not the end, that we will be with the Lord forever. But the other kinds of words, arguments, speculations about, you know, what's happening in the Middle East? How does that tie in today? Does global warming connect with the end of the world and so forth? These are fruitless discussions. For you yourselves are fully aware, he continues, that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. While people are saying there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. Familiar image, the thief in the night. Have you ever been robbed or robbed at night, or has your house been burgled? Maybe you didn't know it till the next day. But the homeowner, he can fortify his residence, I suppose, locks on the doors. I guess you could add an extra layer of brick. But if the thief is determined, the thief will get in. It'll still be a shock either way. But normally the thief doesn't advertise his arrival. He doesn't give you a courtesy call quarter hour before. Me and my mates are coming over and we'll be robbing you. You might want to disappear. They don't do that. What Paul says is that when the Lord does come, it will be fairly much life as normal. You'll find similar wording in Matthew 24 about people carrying on with the great events of life like marriage and work. The birth pains don't end before the baby is born. When the birth pains come, it's a little difficult to ignore them. There is no escape. And so I think Paul's showing that, well, we cannot predict it. We can predict that will happen. We cannot predict when it will happen. There's no escape. Just because you lack some information doesn't mean it won't happen. We cannot predict, only prepare. In fact, that's the name of this mini sermon. Don't predict, prepare. When I travel, I prepare. So, for example, I'm in England right now. Plugs, electrical plugs, are different than they are in most other countries. Well, there are several countries that are like England. I mean, this would work okay in Nigeria, but this does not work in the U.S. Also, the current is twice as strong. But when I travel, I try to bring the right adapter. I try to bring my passport or my passports, because I have more than one, to show up at the airport, as I have done twice before. To show up without a passport is to be denied boarding. You're not going to get on the plane if you didn't bring your passport. There's certain things you have to do to prepare. And there are things that you do that will make life better. But there's certain things, if you forget, you're not going to make it at all. And preparation is so important. Let's continue. But you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief. For you are all children of light, children of the day. We are not of the night or of the darkness. Paul is telling us how we prepare. We can't predict, only prepare. And it has to do with how we're living. There's darkness and there's light. If we remain in the light, then we won't be surprised or caught unaware, unprepared at the judgment. Now, I don't think he's saying it won't be amazing or a surprise in a way. I mean, to be honest, if I looked out this window and I saw the Lord coming in the clouds, of course I'd be surprised. Now, biblically, I shouldn't be, because he said he would come back that way in Acts 1, the same way he went up in the clouds. But it would be a shock. I'm sure I'd be stunned. But we shouldn't be surprised in the negative sense. That is, oh, is that today? You know, like you've slept through a final exam or something. Continue. So then, let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be sober, having put on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet, the hope of salvation. So staying alert is not a call to study ancient prophecies and predict. It's a different sort of watchfulness. It is a moral watchfulness. It's moral. Stay sober. He's not talking specifically about alcohol, though that is the analogy. Of course, there are good reasons that we're warned of the dangers of alcohol. It's danger than almost any other thing on the street. And by the way, why should Christians be taking drugs, whether it's smoking marijuana or getting drunk, to mellow out? Doesn't the Lord ask us to be alert, not nonchalant? I mean, would you drive a car under the influence of alcohol? Now, in some countries like mine, you can have a lot of alcohol in your blood and it's still legal. It's quite amazing. But there are a lot of countries where the limit is zero. That is, if you're above 0.0% alcohol, you've broken the law. You may go to jail. To me, that makes a lot of sense. Not to launch a whole discussion on alcohol. I wouldn't ban that biblically. But if we're influenced by a drug, then we're not fully alert. Slower reaction time, less. Well, I mean, even when we do react, it's more chill. It's more mellow. And that's another reason I can think of to remain alert. It's the condition of the lost. It's because we're working with the Lord. If we're too mellow, we'll be unaware of the opportunities he's putting in our way. Opportunities to build his kingdom, to bear his image, and to share with others. Paul mentions the armor of God here. This is an Old Testament image that appears in the New Testament a few times also. Paul likes it. Breastplate of faith and love, helmet of salvation. So what are we doing to build our faith? And in terms of love, are we involved in the lives of others? Do we care? See, these are the kinds of things we do to make sure we're prepared. Prepared is not building a bunker and stockpiling canned goods and ammunition. This is far from the spirit of Christ. Preparation is faith and love and obeying Jesus. Oh, let's read our very last passage. For God has not destined us for wrath, Paul continues. He's destined us to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us so that whether we are awake or asleep, we might live with him. Therefore, encourage one another and build one another up just as you are doing. And so we've read today 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 1 to 11. He mentions wrath. God has not destined us for wrath. God's anger, his anger against sin, is for those who've rejected God. And as it has been said and reasoned before, if God is a God of love, he must be a God of wrath. If you were a loving father, would you not be angry if someone abused your child? Wouldn't you jealously care for her, for him, or for your wife? If you love, then you can't say, well, there'll be no anger against anything. No, you would try to rescue your child. Let's say your child was abducted. Would you just be mellow about that? Not at all. So love and wrath go together. A lot of people have a weird idea that the Old Testament God is a God of wrath and the New Testament God is a God of love. Totally false. The Old Testament God is a God of both. There are actually more passages on God's love in the Old Testament. And a God of love must be a God of wrath. But we're saved. Now, salvation is ongoing, and yet it's a past event. And we've been saved in the past. And yet, in another sense, we will receive salvation. We look forward to it. So it's past, present, and future. That's the biblical way of looking at this. In some sense, salvation culminates or is clinched only when we've lived faithfully to the end. And that's what true faith does. Now, living with him, Paul says, whether awake or asleep, here he means sleep means death here. It doesn't mean spiritual deadness or spiritual drowsiness, the image that we had before about people, you know, sleeping. Now he's back to the original image that sleep is death. And so he says, encourage one another and build each other up just as you are doing. So this section ends the same way 1 Thessalonians 4 ended in verse 18. We should talk about these things, but it's not just idle chit-chat. It's not just hollow words. It's building each other up through these important teachings. As we understand what Jesus taught, then, yes, we will be prepared. Well, finally, don't predict. Please don't get sucked into some group that's trying to interpret the Old and New Testament and the newspaper and the Weather Channel to predict the end of the world. This has no value at all, and it will almost certainly be wrong. Instead of predicting, prepare. Don't get caught out. Stay alert. Be in a condition of moral readiness. We're doing the right thing. We can't be perfect. Of course, no one's going to be 100% prepared. But there was one who was perfect, and he will speak for us at the judgment day, and that's Jesus Christ. So in our lives now, he is able to give us the Spirit, to let us live by the power of the Spirit, and to be prepared. And that's why we trust Jesus Christ. Well, that's our message. The next video sermon in our series, the third one on the second coming, is simply called Eternal Destiny, and that will be coming from 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. So if you want to read that chapter, you'll be more prepared at that next talk. Thank you for listening. God bless. Farewell from London.